Isn't it nice to hear the always pleasant voice of Steve Bertrand again, Wendy?
I missed him.
I missed him, too.
I missed you guys as well.
I'll say the world.
Did you see my shirt?
Yes, I did.
My son gave me that for Christmas, and I was explaining to everyone I was traveling with. It's a new phrase. It's
yeah.
That's caught on like wildfire.
It is. We started in Central Mexico, and we're going to work our way up north from there.
Yep.
I'll say the world.
Now, you were in Mexico. Did I see a funny T-shirt on the inside of Mexico as well?
Well,
was that your posting, or I can't remember?
There are a lot of Trump border wall T-shirts that are there. Like,
yeah, because I wondered like how you would feel. See, that's weird to me. I would feel weird being in Mexico, being an American at this point.
You know, I've been there a couple times in the last few years, and it's uneventful
different.
Politically.
No.
I don't know.
Since the wall talk, you've been there?
Yeah.
Because I haven't.
It doesn't come up that, unless you bring it up. They're not bringing it up.
Right. And the shirts that were being sold, you know, said things like make tacos, not walls, and relax, you're on the fun side of the wall.
That's the one I loved.
Yeah.
You know, keep calm and relax, you're on the fun side of the wall.
I mean, those are being sold to Americans anyway.
Right.
Those are, you know, that was in Puerto Vallarta, but I was in, for much of the week, in a remote, I guess, town of 12,000 people.
Doing something very noble, by the way.
Well,
you were.
Could you just...
You can say what it is, because this is a really nice thing you do.
Take a compliment.
Okay, I'll take the compliment, thank you, but let me just say this clearly. So, I work with this company, this group called iCare International, Phil and Tim Ortez and all from Morris and elsewhere. They've been doing this for decades, where they go to places in the Hispanic world and fit people for eyeglasses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hugely rewarding and humbling, and but so I would post pictures because I was witnessing so many cool things, and then people would tell me when I don't post the pictures just for people to tell me that I'm doing great things, because believe me, you know me, I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't fun.
Right.
And you just get a huge charge out of being part of this community. And you know what I think is, I really value the nonverbal communication, because I speak very little Spanish. I was in an area where very few of the Mexican people spoke English,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so we made do. So it's a great group. They do great things. You're right, Wendy. But when I post pictures on Instagram and things like that, I'm not fishing for compliments. It's just a fun thing to do.
And these are so these are people who obviously cannot afford eye care. They go in, they need glasses, and you find the correct glasses to fit the person, whatever their needs are.
So, you know, if you donate your glasses to a different organization, and then they work through it. I think we were with Rotarians there, had donated glasses, and they helped organize it. But a lot of these people, some of them are very elderly, and they've never had an eye exam.
Wow.
Others weren't. I mean, I would give the eye chart test to people.
Yeah.
And because we didn't share a language, and because a lot of people who took the test didn't read, you know, they were all by pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So we could, you know, communicate that way and talk. And but there were professors who were there getting glasses because they didn't have access to them.
Wow.
You know, just imagine when we need reading glasses when we get older.
Oh, yeah.
They're not always available at a Walgreens nearby.
Right.
And, you know, we just take that for granted. So if you've got old glasses around, I don't care where you give them, donate them, because they can change people's lives.
Absolutely. I'll add, this is my standard question whenever anybody takes a trip anywhere. Did you hold any tigers while you were gone, Steve?
I did.
You did hold a tiger?
I don't think I posted that, but...
what?
Yeah. Was
really?
That, yeah. Well,
Puerto Vallarta has this amazing zoo.
They have a zoo.
And it's tell Wendy what's different about this zoo from almost every other zoo.
If you pay extra, they actually encourage you to feed the animals. So
really?
You know how at every zoo they say,
please don't feed the animals.
Not feed the animals. At the Puerto Vallarta Zoo, just the opposite. They want you to feed the animals.
So I have a video of me feeding a hippo through a chain link fence. Now,
what'd you feed it? Because they mainly eat grass.
Pixie sticks.
Sharon in this case. No, it was a carrot. But
yeah.
Then at the end, I had a black maned lion cub, like a month old, that was sitting, I'll post them, but was sitting
in my lap. And no trepidation in holding a small lion? You weren't scared at all? There's no chance of attack?
It's a baby.
It's really small. Its claws, I mean, I have scratches. It got all scratched up, and it bit my pants and things like that, but... that and a couple of leopards. It was really cool.
Wow.
But
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah. And the lion needed eyeglasses, which is strange because you rarely see that in the States.
Strictly speaking, I'm not sure a lot of animal welfare advocates would think this was the best thing in the world.
No, you know, growing up in Brookfield, I'm Brookfield's favorite daughter, unbeknownst to anyone else. I worked at Brookfield Zoo for many years, and when I was a little kid, you could feed the animals, and not just like the little stuff that you'd put a quarter in and get the grain or pellets.
Right.
I mean, we used to throw marshmallows to the polar bears. I mean, peanuts. You could feed the animals back then until they realized we need to control their diet.
Am I imagining this, or because when I was a kid, we would go there with some frequency, and it seemed like people always were giving the animals popcorn, which seems really bad for animals.
I feel like I remember marshmallows too.
No, popcorns are all right, and marshmallows too, Steve.
Well, I feel like I remember that. But so they would they gave you a bag of food, like, you know, breadsticks or carrots or corn or things like that.
So they gave you the food to provide. You didn't bring a cracker out of your purse or something.
No.
And
all right, then that's all right.
I just texted you a video of me feeding a hippopotamus that you have to look at.
The carrot.
What an ugly man. We have to have a dental convention down there next. Forget about the eyeglasses.
Although carrots are good for vision.
That's what they're saying. Yeah.
And at Brookfield in the children's zoo, you can feed the goats. There's like a little machine where you can put the quarter in and get the pellets.
Oh. Well, at this zoo, the giraffe can literally stick his head into your pocket, like his mouth into you.
It's that close.
Like Sharon was feeding the giraffe and was getting giraffe slobber on her. So
that's memorable.
It was unique.
It is. I mean, if you like animals, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, again,
if you like them, many people prefer them in their native habitat and not behind a chain link fence.
Right.
Did you ever like petting zoos when you were little?
No.
I know that would not pet in a petting zoo.
Yeah. The two words that Steve said, giraffe and slobber.
I know.
You know.
Right.
One of those words is too much for me. You throw them together.
Yeah, I guess.
Giraffe slobber. Thanks, but no thanks. I'll wait in the car.
I would be honored to be slobbered upon by a giraffe.
It's a pretty interesting experience.
Did you guys ever go to, you know, they have these things. I don't know if they still do, but in Florida, it was common to have a thing, Lion Country Safari. Drive through what would seem like the wilds of Africa, and there were animals all over the place. And, you know, in the commercial, it's so exciting because, you know, you just feet from your car, there's all these animals. And I swear, I remember we would go through it, and the animals are way far away, and they're so apathetic.
They're just taking a nap.
I saw a zebra doing a word search puzzle once, which is so rare. They just so don't care, you know, that you're in there. But in the
You see the billboards. That's
right. I remember the billboards.
Danger in every corner. You're just looking at this going, oh, how exciting would that be to have all those animals climbing on your car? And every once in a while on YouTube, you'll see an animal that'll put its head like in the car window.
Yeah.
Which is too exciting. I want some level of excitement, but it stops just shy of the animal putting its head in the car.
Do you remember Cypress Gardens?
Yes, in Florida.
I remember the signs. No one loved me in my childhood, so we just saw the billboards. No bozo.
Your parents would go, come on, we'll show you the signs to all these tourist attractions.
Oh, it looks cool!
The women in their big hoop skirts, their plantation skirts. And
We did go to Busch Gardens.
That counts. Doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
But we went to Monkey Jungle and
you
Parrot
went to
Jungle.
Monkey Jungle.
We went to Monkey Jungle. Yeah, you have until you see a parrot, or I'm sorry, a monkey riding like a unicycle. You really haven't lived.
We went to Funky Town.
Funky Town.
That was nice.
I don't think that was a tourist attraction, Steve. I think that's just someplace your parents took you.
Yeah, they paid. You had to charge.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a little break. We've got a full show for you. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill left with Wendy Snyder. You had a tough task over the weekend. You had to pull off a surprise party.
Yes.
Did it work? Did it work?
Yes. My husband, Jimmy Mack, is turning 50 on Thursday. He, like you, took his birth date off of Facebook because he didn't want anybody to know he's turning 50.
I don't blame him.
So sorry, honey.
You did the right thing.
So I threw a surprise party for him and tried to work out all the kinks. He had a concert he went to Friday night, and then Saturday all day he was at his fantasy baseball league draft.
Yes.
So we just were trying to figure out a way to plan a party. So I said, me and the boys want to take you to Bob Chin's for your birthday.
Uh-huh.
The boys are busy next weekend, so we have this all planned. And then he said, okay, so I'll meet you at Bob Chin's. Meantime, his mom put together a whole little party situation at her house. So I had to get him to his mom's house. And we were texting back and forth. And he's like, can I just meet you at Chin's? Because I'm 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
And at first I said, okay, because I wanted to act like I had no plan in place.
Right.
And then maybe a couple hours later, I said, you know, why don't we just meet at your mom's?
Yeah.
She's not going to be able to see you next weekend. So why don't you pop by there? And I get, but I'm only 15 minutes from Chin's. And then I start putting on the guilt. I'm like, your mom will be really hurt if she can't see her firstborn to give him his birthday present.
Wow.
She has something that she found that it just, please, just come by.
Do you think he sensed something was up?
He did not. I did find out that in this day and age of people not walking anywhere, what gave it away was 30 seconds prior to him walking into his mom's house because no one parked far away. They all parked in front of the house.
So did he see cars that he recognized, or did he just see more cars than were normally there?
More cars that were normally there. He came with his friend Pat that he did the baseball draft with, and as they're pulling up, he's like, wow, are my parents having a party?
So he figured it out
and
just
then
seconds before he entered.
Yes, like 30 seconds, and then he looked to poor Pat, my secret agent that helped me out during this, and he said, if there's a party, you would know something about this, right? And Pat just kind of gazed out the window, and he said, I don't really know what you're talking about. And then at some point, I think Pat said, just get in the house.
Yeah, that's when you know.
But that's okay.
It's hard to pull one off. It really is.
It is, and a lot of his high school friends, his mom hosted, and this is the perfect way to throw a party because she did all the work.
Perfect.
I wasn't there.
Oh,
I couldn't help.
So these were all guys he went to high school with or grade school with?
Mainly high school.
High school. And does he see them with any regularity, or was this the first time he saw them in a long time, or what?
It was pretty small, and there were a couple people who didn't show up, but mainly there were some that he hasn't seen in a while, but mainly his group of friends.
That's very fun.
So it was good, and then we went to Bob Chin's, and oh my God.
With everybody?
No.
Oh, just the immediate family.
Yeah, anyone was welcome to come. I just wanted them to know I'm not treating them to that part of it. So I said, we're going to...
You made that abundantly
clear?
Yes,
I said, well, the boys and I are taking Jim to Bob Chin's. You're welcome to come.
On your dime.
Yeah, I didn't have to say that. But
well, how long was the mom's house part of the party?
5 to 7.
And
he got there
manageable.
About 5:15, and then I specifically said we'll be leaving at 7 to go to dinner.
Yes.
And it worked out really well, and he felt loved, and that's what we wanted him to feel.
Would you want a surprise party? Because I've made it abundantly clear to my wife, I'd never want a surprise party under any circumstances.
Many years ago, when I turned 50, all right, 6 years ago,
yeah,
we often go to Russell's barbecue beef in, I guess, I don't know if it's River Forest, it's on Thatcher.
Yeah.
That's a family thing that we've always gone to, so... I was told, you know, my brother and sister-in-law and nieces were in from Peoria, and we're all going to meet at Russell's. And I said, okay, whatever. Sure, we can do it on a Sunday afternoon. So in typical Wendy fashion, I was running a little bit late, and my sister kept texting me going, are you coming anytime soon? And I'm like, yeah, order without me. I'll be there. And when I walked in, she had arranged all my cousins. It was a pretty big surprise party, which I had no idea about because I didn't wash my hair. I didn't like what I was wearing.
Yeah.
I just thought I was meeting with the immediate family.
Yeah.
So then we get in and I said, I can't believe my sister and cousin threw this party for me. And my sister said, we told Jim about it. And Jim goes, well, you just said like a couple of people were coming. I didn't know it was a surprise party. And my sister said, what part of surprise do you not understand?
Good question.
So that was,
question.
You know, the milestone birthday is 50. You kind of got to do it. I like big. Jim doesn't. So it was not really that major, but still surprised. And, you know.
But don't you think most people fall under one camp or the other of, yes,
I hate
I'm
surprises.
Open to the idea. Yeah, I just...
So, but your next big one is just a couple of years away, your 60th, and there'll be
a... We've already planned a big surprise for that one.
I'm looking forward to that.
Huge, huge surprise.
Well,
it won't have a closing time of 7 o'clock, let me tell you that right now.
7:30.
7:15.
I was going to have a big 55th birthday party for myself and try and get Sammy Hagar to come and sing I Can't Drive 55.
Oh, that would have been nice.
That was last year, and I didn't really want to plan it for myself.
A friend of the family turned 90 a couple weeks ago.
God bless him.
The family put together a surprise party. My family attended it. And as we walk in, we notice that he's there. He's at the party. And then his kids explain that at the age of 90, they sat down and they realized that everybody yelling surprise when he walks through a door might not be the best thing for him. So
that's thinking ahead.
Right.
So you guys turned out to be surprised.
We were surprised.
Yeah.
But I wonder, this is a horrible thing to wonder, but has anybody ever had a heart attack? They walk into a surprise party, they're older, everybody yells surprise, and that's the end. That would be the worst possible thing that could happen at a surprise party.
I'm sure it's happened once or twice. I can't imagine it's a common
that would
day
be
occurrence.
Dreadful.
When my husband threw one for me in my 30th, I had 2 weeks ago my second child.
Oh, no.
And I just thought we were going out to a nice dinner. My mother had the babies, you know, both of them.
Yeah.
And I was not really in the mood for that.
I know.
First of all, I was breastfeeding, and I was not very comfortable.
Right, so you had to empty out. Did you turn to the guests at your party?
I'm like, lovely to see you, but where the heck is my baby? Because I kind of need my baby more than you right now.
Wow.
I was a little mad at him. I was a little mad. It was too early. It was 2 weeks. All my friends were there, you know.
I think it's funny that you guys are having parties and you're surrounded by the people who love you the most and you're worried that you haven't washed your hair.
Right.
Well,
they would be more forgiving, but you do want to look your best.
That's true. You want to look your best.
If it's a party and you're, you know, going to be surprised,
right.
You want, you know, to look your best.
You would think.
All right. Jim's on the line. Not my Jim. Hey, Jim.
I got a really cool story real quick. I would bring listeners to concerts for a radio station and for meet and greets, and I had two extra. And I'm waiting out in Milwaukee at the Rave, and I'm looking, and this kid comes up, and he says, "What's all those things on your coat?" I said, "I'm from a radio station." He says, "Oh, man, my dad's 50th birthday party today." He said that he's been coming to see Alice Cooper for years. Well, the guy had an I Love It to Death album, and he's standing there, and I says, "You know what?" I said, "Happy birthday." And the guy was just absolutely crying. It was a night he'll never forget. Me neither.
So
it was really cool.
He got to meet Alice Cooper?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's a surprise party.
Wow. What radio station?
Will Rock down in Kenosha.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. You did a good thing for somebody's birthday.
Oh, man, it was great. It was great. I've done that a few times since then, too. So
always with Alice Cooper,
really cool.
Somehow.
You know, what's weird is radio stations don't get free tickets to concerts anymore.
No.
So
no.
Yeah, it's tough. It is. It's tough.
Jim, thanks for the call. Have a great week.
That was a nice thing.
Yeah, yeah. All right, a break, some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Steve. Later in the show, noted pet expert Steve Dale will join us. I'm guessing to talk about pets. And then Eric Zorn will also be by. And he also wants to talk about pets, Wendy. I don't know what's going on.
He just lost his dog.
Is that what's going on? Oh, I didn't know that.
He does want to talk about pets?
He says he does. Yeah.
Yeah, he just lost his dog.
Oh. Over the weekend, I attended the C2E2 convention. You normally go. You didn't go this time around.
I had a surprise party.
You had a lot going on this weekend.
And I was bummed to miss it.
Yeah.
Because I like to see the Walking Dead people.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a lot of celebrities like stars of The Walking Dead. They had a reunion with Alicia Silverstone, Paul Rudd, Donald Faison, Breckin Meyer, everybody from
Clueless.
Clueless. Yeah, I couldn't think
you
of the name
clueless
of the movie. I was clueless
minute.
About Clueless.
Is it Alicia?
Alicia Silverstone. She looks great.
She has been.
Everybody in that cast has aged very, very well. Usually you get one person that just fell off the table, but not in this case, Wendy. They all look good.
Not like you're judgmental or anything.
No. A strange moment for me there.
Talk.
All right. There's a thing that exists called cosplay, which is people who dress up like their favorite cartoon characters or movie stars or whatever. And whatever.
Have you ever done it?
No.
As an adult?
No.
Can I just say, despite the fact that my husband loves Star Wars, he's never dressed up.
He refuses to dress like a stormtrooper.
That would be the end of things.
Right. And he knows that, right?
I don't think he has any desire to do it.
All right. So as my friend and I are snaking through the convention, you know, different
crowded
lanes.
Crowded this year,
lanes,
I heard.
Jam-packed to the rafters.
It's bigger every year.
Jam-packed. Bigger and better every year. We find ourselves walking down an aisle where there's a panel discussion about cosplay, which is fine.
People are way in. If you're into it, you're into it.
But now keep in mind, for people who are just hearing about it for the first time, all it is you're dressing like Winnie the Pooh, or you're dressing like Hello Kitty, or you're dressing like Mr. Spock. And I think that's it, right? Am I leaving anything out? You just dress like these people. That's it, right? There's no other element to it, right? All right, so there's a panel discussion, and I can't make out who anybody, I don't know who anybody is supposed to be, except for the one guy who's at the front of the table who looks exactly like Woody from Toy Story.
Oh.
Right? So the discussion is why he decided to dress like Woody from Toy Story, and then funny anecdotes about it, and the place is jammed with people. They're just all sitting there. And he's telling a story. He goes, yeah, I had to decide which character I was going to dress up like. And I've seen Toy Story a bunch of times, so I went with Woody. No response. He goes, you know, people used to tell me I look a little like him anyway. So then I put on the cowboy hat, and I put on the shirt, and I put on the pants, and there it is. I look just like Woody.
Well,
and
that's
like,
not
no
a big reaction story
whatsoever.
Yeah.
And he goes, so I started out the first time I did it, it was for Halloween. And I went to a party, and I won third place in a contest. You know, they had a costume contest. I won third place. And I'm like, wow, I bet if I make my costume look more like Woody, next year I can come back and win this thing. And he goes, I went back next year, and again, I came in third place. And it gets no, everybody's just like hanging on his, you know, they're just listening and nodding and stuff like that. He goes, and then I had the costume, and I thought, I should wear this thing more often. So I started wearing it more often, and people would come up to me in a mall. And they'd go, hey, you look just like Woody from Toy Story. And I would smile, and we'd take our picture and stuff. And everybody's just nodding and stuff. And this just kept going on and on and on and on. And I said to my friend, I go, how long can this go on before somebody goes, all right, we get it. You're just like Woody from Toy Story. Next. But it just kept happening.
See, that seems like a poor choice for the panel, because usually it would be like this meaningful moment that all
exactly.
of a sudden you have to dress like Hello Kitty.
Right, right. But I think they let him keep going because he was the only one that was kind of recognizable. There was a girl sitting next to him who was dressed like a bug. And then you go, well, probably somebody from Bug's Life, right? No.
Well, Overwatch, I was looking. Overwatch is a game, and that was Avengers and Overwatch cosplay closeout C2E2 of this year. So, Avengers characters, Overwatch. The times I've gone to C2E2, there's always someone dressed as, like, Rick Grimes or
from
Coral.
Right?
But,
from
like,
Walking Dead.
Dead on.
Yes.
And then they walk around, and you say, hey, can I take a picture? And they say, yeah. And it's just, it's fun for them. It
yeah.
hurts no one.
But you have to admit, it's a little strange.
Well,
right. This guy's whole claim to fame is that he bought a cowboy outfit and he wears it.
But see, now strange is you know, relative, because you collect toys. People might think that's strange.
But I would never say to 70 people, "Hey, come and sit down, and I'll tell you that I collect toys." Because
but that would be interesting.
But he'd never set up a card table outside the Auntie Annie's pretzel shop,
right?
And say, "Hey, look at my latest action figures."
Right. But, like I, but because I get it, everybody has a passion, and good, that makes life better. But I'm trying to think of the process by which somebody at the convention said, we got to find a guy who dresses like a cowboy and then set up a room where he can tell people that he dresses like Woody the cowboy.
I would have gotten someone who was more eloquent in his love of why you want
to. He's dressed like Woody.
The whole thing about dressing up is just weird to me. So I don't know if it's weird because, like, I'm weird because I hate it and it freaks me out.
Yes.
Or if the people who do it are weird because they're willing to take on these other, like, pretend to be other people.
Right.
There's weirdness on both sides, I think. But
now, I could be totally wrong here, and I'm not touting Star Wars because Jimmy Mack is way into it, but I think that's what that and Star Trek is kind of what started the whole cosplay thing. And there's the 501st Legion of Star Wars that they dress up as stormtroopers and they go to children's hospitals mm-hmm. and they really do like great charitable work. Why do you laugh?
No, I think that's extremely noble. That, you know, because then a kid's in the hospital and he sees his favorite Star Wars character in the hospital,
awesome.
And it brightens their day. But let's say I did dress like Woody the Cowboy from Toy Story. I would keep it on the down low. I wouldn't go, could you set up an area where I can tell people?
But you have a radio show. These people want attention. And what better place to go than C2E2?
So you're saying maybe set up a Tinder page or something like that?
No, there's already a cosplay website.
Remember the convention, the cosplay?
Yes.
And there's a fire in the middle of the night in the hotel in Romeo.
Well, these were people that dressed.
All these people had been spending their nights with someone else, had to run out in their costumes.
Didn't they dress like mascots?
The furries.
They were furries.
Okay,
yeah.
Guys.
But what? Is it that weirder? I think it's almost. Why is that weirder?
Because that's a sexual thing.
You don't think there's some sexual end of this? There's got to be.
His name is Woody.
Oh, you guys, really?
I'm telling you, even though I was only in that discussion group for 5 minutes. But I guarantee you there's that element is going on the outside, too. Is somebody sees somebody and goes, wow, that woman's dressed like a gummy bear. Let's see.
Let's see. All right. We now know what turns you on.
Right. So nimble.
God. But the furries were like, that was like a, you know, and I'm sorry if I've offended any furries or fuzzies or whatever you guys
don't
are.
Don't worry. They can't text. Their hands are covered.
Are they all about sex? I didn't realize that.
I think so.
I don't think. Well, at that convention, at the furry convention, I think that was the main playing card. But although
now they're saying the truth about furries, fandom, not fetish. But of course, they're saying that.
So
I disagree.
So that was a furry sex convention.
Well, they didn't bill it that way. They just called it a furry convention.
They would have had a bigger turnout.
A lot bigger. They just say it's a convention, right. But then whatever you guys do on your free time, you know, have at it.
So I really totally missed that. I thought these were people who just like to be furry. I didn't know that they like to be furry with each other.
With each other. But I'm telling you that's part of the allure at a convention like this is that even though they're just saying, yeah, it's fun to dress like Woody the Cowboy from Toy Story, they know that somewhere out there there's a girl who gets excited by seeing Woody the Cowboy from Toy Story.
These really are just 21st century Civil War reenactors.
Yes.
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 And I'm sorry, but you, I'm sure, saw families all dressed up too.
Always.
That is good, always. Wholesome fun.
Yeah.
Just because you guys don't agree with it.
You guys
like to go to the beach with your family, these people, this is fun for them.
You don't think it's weird in any way, shape, or form?
I think it's out of the norm.
You don't think there's going to be a great memoir for some damaged child 30 years from now who had to go to a cosplay convention?
Right. My dad's dressed like Wolverine. My mom's dressed like Black Widow. Please help me.
Rhea is on the line. Hey, Rhea.
Hi.
What do you have to say to these two clowns?
They're not dressed as clowns. In one word, you sounded disappointed. Just the word hi sounded disappointed.
No, I think it's interesting, but a lot of people, like, I don't know personally, friends of friends, do the cosplay because they want to create something. They sew it, they make it, they build it, and see how close they can get to what is professionally done just in their own basement and garage.
There's no question there is an element of that. That's the most noble part of the whole thing, is somebody saying, I want to make myself look like Flash Gordon. I'm going to go out of my way. I'm going to get a jetpack. I understand that part of it.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily the buying of it. I think isn't that how it mostly started, with people trying to be as creative as possible?
Yes. Yes, that's how it started, but it's morphed into something new.
It's morphed into a little more than that.
Yeah, it has. Rhea, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
All right, the golden rule of cosplay is as follows. Cosplay is not consent. That means even if someone is wearing something revealing or they are cosplaying a character with a proclivity for certain behaviors, do not touch them without asking. Do not verbally or sexually harass them.
All right, there are signs that say that all over McCormick Place. And I think to myself, what other convention has that sign? Like, if you're at some tool and die convention, are there signs
Don't touch
everywhere?
The tools.
Right. Right. Or you'll die. All right. We'll take a break. And then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Oh, so many texts, Wendy. Here's one. Bill and Wendy, there are some cosplayers. If you're just joining us, we were talking about the C2E2 convention, which was in town over the weekend. I stumbled through a panel of people who I didn't recognize. I didn't know who they were supposed to be, but there was one guy I did recognize. It was Woody from Toy Story. Not actually Woody from Toy Story, a guy who dressed up like Woody from Toy Story. That's part of the fun. So he is a cosplayer, and he discussed it at great lengths. Bill and Wendy, there are some cosplayers who make 6+ figures and video game. It's true.
All right, I may be starting to cosplay.
When I did the night show, the late night show here, I had a girl on that was making $250,000 a year dressing like Disney princesses. She would just show up at conventions dressed like your favorite Disney princess.
I've done that and never made a penny.
You have to take it out of your bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah. And a guy who was making similar money, not quite as much, but he was also involved in it. And he would dress up like, Star Trek, Star Wars, those guys. So who's laughing now? Asked the question. Here's one from 618. Hey, guys, this is weird, but this is no weirdness compared to the crazy bronies. You and I discussed them once on the show.
Oh, the My Little Pony lovers?
These are adults who, for some reason, find some excitement in the kid show My Little Pony. I don't understand it.
You're also getting reamed.
I saw that.
These people go to a place where they won't be judged because perhaps every other day they're ridiculed for whatever reason. This is a place to escape, have fun in a safe environment, and escape bullies, cancer, and everyday life. A fat guy can be Superman, and et cetera, et cetera.
Right. I get that. I understand that.
I am not interested in cosplay or involved in any way. However, I feel compelled to point out that you're making fun of people who dress up and share something in common for the weekend, and even families who do that. However, most people don't think it's weird to watch their teenage kids dress up in pads and helmets and beat the crap out of each other on Friday nights for fall football games.
Look, I just said it's weird on either
yes,
side
you
of
did.
It. No, but I mean, because I know I have a little weirdness in myself that I could not possibly wear a costume. I hate Halloween parties. I hate that stuff.
I don't like dressing up either.
I get it. It could be weird on my side, but, you know.
But then there are every once in a while.
It's not a cure for cancer. Dressing up in a costume and going to a convention. I mean, I think that's a little.
You guys, I do not like dressing up. I hate Halloween. You know I say that all the time. Yeah. I loved it when I was a kid, but now it's like, but last Halloween I did my Ozzy Osbourne costume and I really got into it and I really felt like it looked pretty good and it was really kind of fun.
Yeah.
And had I thought about it and there was no surprise party for my husband this weekend, I would have gone as Ozzy.
Yeah.
Although, who would have cared? He wouldn't have been a character then.
Right.
It's like,
right.
But
I know.
I think it's harmless fun.
It is. Believe me, I know it is. I just hope. I hope this guy has something else other than the fact that he has a cowboy outfit.
Well, he needed a better story. If he was standing up for a panel, you have to say something like, you know, God, I really identify with Woody. I mean, you got to have a story.
There were elements of that, but the punchline to everything was, and then I put on my Woody costume, and I look a lot like him, and then the crowd would just nod, which, you know.
Steve Bertrand is just mad because the only costume he can wear is the Jolly Green Giant.
Oh, safe places, huh? That's what we're talking
hurtful.
About, safe places now?
That's right. Hurtful.
I just want to be myself.
Come on.
I thought that was funny. I wish I would have texted that in. Things that are out of the norm seem weird. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You think it's weird that people love animals?
No, I don't think it's.
You don't?
No,
you
I
just
understand
don't,
that.
You're just not into it.
Right.
All right.
Right.
Well,
no, I don't
outside
think it's weird.
Of the norm is a different way of saying
weird.
But no, it isn't. Unique. I've
Unusual.
Been outside the norm my whole life. I strive for that. And yes, I'm weird.
Well.
But I just, you know, sometimes you like to stand out.
Right.
And we have a radio show to do that. Some people don't have that. Although, really, with Facebook now, anyone can
Everyone does.
The attention they deserve.
Yes.
Yes. And there are a lot of cosplay pictures on Facebook, I've noticed.
Yes.
It hurts no one, man.
But don't you think, just by virtue of that sign being everywhere, because some of these people, some of the costumes, they are very scantily clad.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Extremely.
The sexiest zombies I've ever seen. Really? I mean, they just, there's a lot of stuff that little kids shouldn't be looking at, like.
There was, let cleavage. The record show, Wendy, yeah, did the Jeez. International term for cleavage. There was a girl there, and I have no idea who she was. That maybe that's why it doesn't mean anything to me is, you know how on Halloween, if you have to ask a kid who they're supposed right. to be, you can't just walk around this convention going, who are you supposed to be? But there was this girl who was, I saw more of her than I saw in my 4 years of high school when I was dating.
It's like,
I
who mean, are those?
No, who is that, Steve? Oh. You worded it wrong.
There are a lot of Harley Quinns. That happens a lot.
Yes.
So was it someone like that? Like a
no,
sexy...
No, she was like...
sexy maiden?
No. You know what I would... She looked like a medieval jailer.
Is it from Game of Thrones?
Don't stop now, please. Keep going.
Oh, God. Oh,
all right.
Yeah.
So imagine it's like the 18th century... And we're in Europe, and there's a woman who has a dungeon. So she's carrying around a big ring of keys, and she's got like a jailer outfit, but a lot of it she forgot to put on that day. So she's walking around like there, and I don't know who's going, wow, it's a sexy jailer from the 18th century. Like, it just, I don't know.
I'm sure that's a major character
and
somewhere.
And you can't respond to her
no.
in a sexual way.
No, well, the signs... I mean,
we're
I wouldn't,
on the air,
I wouldn't
Steve.
Anyway, but the signs remind you that just because she's dressed like a sexy jailer from another century, she is not actually a sexy jailer from another century. But I guessed that already.
I'm glad you had fun.
It was fun. Can't wait till next year. All right, we'll take a break. Noted pet expert Steve Dale. Well, I wonder what he'll dress as, Wendy. This is always a mystery. We'll find out in just a few moments. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Laff. It's Wendy Snyder, joined by one of our favorite guests, noted pet expert Steve Dale. He's the host of Steve Dale's Pet World, heard right here on WGN Radio Sundays at 6:30 a.m. Hi, Steve. How are you?
You have one of my favorite producers.
Yeah?
Jasmine used to work
amazing.
With you, didn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we stole her.
Yes, you did.
This
you
was one of your
her.
Themes?
Yeah.
Your themes for
yeah,
your show?
Yeah, yeah, and that's why she's playing it. She remembered that. Thank you, Jazzy. Yeah. I like
we're
that.
Out of time. Thanks, Steve, for coming by. It was good to see you again.
You need more time. I listen to you on Sunday mornings. You need more time.
Well, tell the powers that be.
Yeah,
it's
I have
not...
no clouds.
Because you say it, it happens. Noted pet expert, it's now a hashtag on it is
yeah
on Instagram.
Excellent.
Yeah,
glad
thank
to hear
you.
That. I'm glad
yes.
to hear
that's
that.
All Bill's doing.
Yep. Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome. You got to interview one of the most influential people in the world of animals, Jane Goodall.
Oh, in the world.
Yeah.
You know, if we had world leaders like her, we'd have a better world. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that because of her, we do have a better world. So when she first walked into the room, I actually wanted to cry.
Aww.
You know, I mean, her demeanor, her influence, I mean, and I told her that, and she looked at me like, I'm just Jane,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then I said, I need to hug you, and she said, everybody says that, and I hugged her. She is just incredible. Her spirit is just like no one else I have ever met on the planet.
Yeah.
And we need her for a long time to come, and she's 84 years old. She's up for a Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, excellent.
It's
good.
About time, and I have a link on my blog, stevedale.tv. There's a link to a piece that I did, and in that story,
mm-hmm.
you'll find a link to how you can sign your name and say, yeah, she does deserve, and she does.
She's an anthropologist. She's a primatologist.
She is. And she's an ambassador of peace or some such title for the United Nations as well.
She's devoted her life to studying animals. And hopefully through that study of animals, we have a broader, better understanding of the whole animal kingdom. Huh?
But moreover, she told me how her life changed in Chicago, actually. She was at an event and... the other experts in her field were talking about all sorts of different things, including how, and she knew this, she knew that chimpanzees and other animals were, and this goes back to the late 80s,
mm-hmm.
were losing habitat and being hunted. And she said, I need to do something about it. And she certainly has tried to and succeeded, but also to make our world a better place. She travels all over. So chimpanzees, if it were not for her, would probably still be used by the National Institutes of Health in this very country. There's a program called Roots and Shoots where young people around the world, I forget how many nations, like 40 nations or some such thing, and thousands in each country make a difference in all sorts of different ways. It's a program that the Jane Goodall Institute began. Mm-hmm. We had the pleasure of going to a benefit which raised money for the Jane Goodall Institute. And at our table was a woman who told us about her daughter. Her daughter was very shy in school. She was concerned about her own looks, if you will. And she was afraid to speak up. And then she created a Roots and Shoots program and began to do science-y things, which was her interest. Mm. Today, she's got some big job at NOAA in the United States for our government, working in environmental sciences, speaks to young people. And if it were not for this Roots and Shoots program that Jane Goodall began, and Jane Goodall told me that there are so many stories like that. And wow, what a legacy to leave.
And good for her. She decides she wants to do something. And even though she was by herself when she first started this, she's made such a huge difference. Her passion and her stick-to-itiveness is should be saluted.
In a, you guys might have enjoyed this, in or not. So I recorded, we had a crew out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm recording all this for video.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions I asked her was, Donald Trump is sitting right next to you now. What would you tell him? Because he doesn't believe that this climate change thing is really happening. And she's gone all over the world and she has seen it with her own eyes. All you have to do is go to YouTube and you can see it with your own eyes. How the, you know, the obvious sorts of things that have been talked about. The ice caps on the South and North Pole are melting. But moreover, no matter where you live on the planet, ask a friend in Indonesia, ask a friend in Rwanda, ask a friend in Brazil or in Chicago who's been in that area for 25 years. They'll say the weather today isn't like it was.
You mm-hmm. cannot argue with science, end of discussion.
Yes,
that's it. That's what I would say.
I would agree.
And then I'd go get another drink because they're not going to change people don't believe are not going to change their minds.
Yes, but
what was her answer to your question, Steve?
I don't think he'd want to sit next to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Good answer. Great question, by the way.
Thank you.
Very, very good question.
And then I pressed her on it. I said, okay, but he is sitting next to you.
Yeah.
And you'll have to wait till the video comes out. And she continued to give what I would call a good answer.
Yeah. You've interviewed her before. This was your third time talking to Jane Goodall.
Yeah.
Has she changed much over the years, or is it the same dedication level? I know she's always globetrotting, going to different parts of the world.
Yeah, this is going to sound weird. When she walks into a room, and I'm not a spiritual guy,
mm-hmm.
there's this, like, something about her, a presence that I've never met with any other human being.
I've seen this before, Steve. You're in love with Jane Goodall.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Depending on how you define love.
All right,
I don't think it's romantic love so much. But yes, I mean, how can you not admire this person who has, with an interest I have in primatology, I certainly appreciate everything we've learned about primates. And I appreciate the fact that she said, I'm talking to you. I ought to explain this to you, how dogs made a difference in her life. Because her childhood dog, she saw with her dog and other dogs just who lived near her,
mm-hmm.
that all of these dogs have their own individual personalities, and they also have real emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Any dog owner knows that, right? Well, way back when Jane Goodall was chosen to do work at Gombe National Park in Africa, she began to name the chimpanzees.
Mm-hmm.
And as crazy as it does sound, it was hugely controversial back in the day.
Because why?
Because chimpanzees were just animals without real emotions.
Yeah.
This relative that's as close to us as you can get, 98.8% of our genetics are the same as chimpanzees. That's probably closer than dogs and wolves are to one another.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the scientists said, no, you cannot do that. They're just animals. They don't have real emotions. Well, today, of course, we know that Dr. Goodall was correct.
Yeah.
Because we can look at brain chemistry, and the brain chemistry, in fact, of your dog at home, a chimpanzee, and maybe not you, but me, all the same.
That thing that she's done, and I guess Diane Fossey, you could put her in the same thing, where they just go off and they live with animals.
And a third one, Berute Galdikas.
And Berute Galdikas, of course.
Yes, of course.
I didn't even want to say that. I mean, everybody knows Berute Galdikas would fit into this. But I could see you doing that at some point if somebody said, Steve, you're just going to go off and you're going to live with anteaters for 6 months. I could see you do that.
Interesting you chose that species.
Yeah.
Actually, I did at one time in my life.
Which
did you not know this?
No, I didn't know that.
Really? I did some field research with Berute Galdikas.
Yeah.
Yes, orangutans in Borneo for about 3 weeks. Just 3 weeks, but 3 weeks of my life.
You lived among them for 3 weeks.
I did do that, yes.
What was that like?
It was the most amazing
orange.
Experience. A lot of orange. But it wasn't henna rinse. It was the real thing.
Right.
And it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life to... track every morning, because all great apes like us go to bed at the same place. They make a bed. They actually go to bed at night. So we knew where they were going to be. Our job was to track them in the forest, write down everything they did, other orangutans that they met with, what they ate, everything. That was our job. So I would get up at about 5 in the morning. A guide would take us through the forest, either a half a mile or miles away, wherever the orangutan put the bed, you know, and then we'd wait for the orangutan to wake up. Now, to do that, we'd set up a hammock below the trees way above, because orangutans pretty much never go to the ground, especially females. So they're up in the trees all the time. So we would set up a hammock below them. One of the times, an orangutan actually woke us up. It's like, come on, follow me. You know how she did that?
How?
She urinated on us and laughed.
Yeah.
She did. She actually did.
Yeah.
She, I mean, you could see her do this.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, but what we would do is, you don't believe
me. It went south very quickly.
Yeah.
You have to take a break.
You do.
But we're just going to tell
Why
you
now?
That. We're not going to demonstrate the same behavior.
No,
but which
not.
Came first, orange or orangutan? Who was named after each other? Because orange and orang.
I think orangutan means father of the forest, maybe? I'd have to
Google
that. But
isn't that weird that orange,
the
their
orange.
Color, and orang, it's almost there?
Oh,
but
I don't
think
know.
Think about that during the break.
I never have thought about it. Good point.
Think about it now.
I will.
Or
more with
we'll
Steve
do something
Dale,
on you.
Good friend of Berute Galdikas. We'll talk to Steve more after this.
Noted pet expert Steve Dale is visiting with us, Bill
I am.
And Wendy. I have a little crazy puppy named Kona, who's a little over a year, and I was looking to board him, and I went looking around at places, and I found it common yet peculiar in my eyes that a lot of these places that you board dogs, no one is there from 9 p.m. till 6 in the morning. Sometimes they have one person on residence. That scared me enough to go to Rover.com and find somebody that could watch my dog in their house where someone's supervising all the time.
Well, on January 14th, in West Chicago, there was a kennel fire here where the person who was watching the dogs left to run an errand. And that's when the fire began. 31 dogs were killed. But it's not incredibly unusual. On Christmas Eve in Maryland, I forget the number, it was like 18 dogs were killed in a fire. Just a couple of weeks ago in Minnesota, all dogs that were boarded there, 100% of them, succumbed as a result of a fire. So I thought, this can't keep happening. So I went to the Illinois director of the Humane Society of the United States, and I told him that. He agreed. And I said, let's look at what laws we have, which are virtually zilch, except local community ordinances, which vary greatly from community to community. We were only looking at Illinois. So I said, and the director said, we together said we have an idea. That idea is that all dogs boarded at kenneling facilities must either have someone there 24/7, must have a sprinkler system, or must have an alarm system that rings directly to first responders.
Yeah.
And that's
how... some of these places do, but it's still...
Some do.
I want a person there.
Well, Representative Diane Pappas picked up the bill, and it goes to committee on Wednesday. So if you agree with this idea... Now, better is better. I agree with you. If we could take two of the three instead of one of the three,
yeah.
But we also wanted something that would pass and something that would make a difference and also something that wasn't financially onerous to individual owners.
Yes.
So a sprinkler system, for example, in truth can be expensive, not as nearly expensive these days as an alarm system that rings directly to first responders. And I've talked about it on the radio, of course, on my show, and then I got all these texts from firefighters who explained to me, well, this is good for us because the quickly we can get to a fire, obviously, the less chance of an injury to a firefighter, less damage to that building or lessening the chances of the fire spreading to an adjacent building.
Yeah.
So it's all good in every way, not only saving animal lives. So if you agree, contact your state rep or your state senator.
These places have to disclose the fact that they don't have somebody staying overnight, don't they? When
no.
They
no,
don't have to
no.
tell you that?
That was on my list of questions to ask.
Wow.
If you ask, they should
they
answer.
Yeah, they tell you.
Hope. But no, you have to ask that question. You know, but if it's a small place, I guess I can see why. It's still your choice. And Wendy, I wouldn't do it either. You're not alone. I wouldn't leave our animals, you know, with no human being there for other reasons as well. You know, what if the
what if one gets sick?
Yes,
what if
I was just
someone's choking on something? You need someone to supervise.
Exactly. So I totally agree personally. But the way the law reads, at least will give these operators a choice. Also, to your point, when things like this happen, and there's proposed legislation, it gives people like me an opportunity to say, all right, think about this before you board or your kennel your dog. It's about education as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you agree with what we're saying, contact your state rep or your state senator, truly.
And tell them what? What do I say?
Describe the bill, or I will give you the bill number. I think it's 3390, and it's in the House. I hope I'm right about that.
Well, let us know if you're not. 3390.
I will. Yes.
This could be something totally different.
Yes.
Because we don't travel very much. And when I went to board Kona, I went to several places in the area. And all these places said, well, I said, so is someone here overnight? And they said, no, from like about 9:30 p.m. till 6 a.m., no one's here. And I said, what if something happens?
Sure.
And they said, well, God forbid. I said, I know the God forbid, but, you know, I want somebody around here.
Right.
No, there are things like bloat, you know, where it happens very quickly, and if there's no one there, an animal could die.
Yeah.
You're right about the potential choking hazard. Sometimes individual animals can go into heart failure, presumably. So there are
And I know I'm just a worry wart.
No,
worry warthog in this segment.
In this segment, right.
I agree with you.
Steve, great to see you again. I hope you and Jane Goodall find a place together.
She's gone already.
You know, other people are saying I could see where the infatuation
of
comes
course.
From because it's like
two-sided.
Two-sided.
So, Steve's wearing a Jane Goodall hat, and I saw a picture of her today. She's wearing a Steve Dale hat, so you guys have some magic going. That's excellent.
There aren't too many of those.
Listen to Steve Dale's Pet World Sundays at 6:30 a.m. right here on WGN-TV. Thanks for coming by, Steve. Appreciate
it.
I'm WGN Radio.
Thank you.
Yeah. Maybe TV soon.
Maybe.
You never know.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn,
what, Tuesday?
The greatest father in all the
keep playing
land.
It. Just
more for Monday.
Out. Yeah, is that what it is?
Zorn, like, like in the Soviet Union when the leader has died. They're used to play like military marches for a whole time.
Right.
This is what they'll do.
Similar.
Yeah.
Eric Zorn is here with a sad story to tell, and we have asked Steve Dale to stick around a little extra to help counsel you through this very difficult time.
I'm really glad he's staying. Thanks.
Yes.
I wasn't here last Monday, as you may remember. You've probably forgotten already. But
that's Bill.
Oh, who's this? Who's coming in at 11:30? But early that morning, our dog died.
Mm.
We had an 11-and-a-half-year-old Chesapeake Bay Retriever, and I've been nursing her along, and my wife is out of town, and and she had a really rough night on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And then at about 5:30 in the morning, she died in our front hall.
Hmm.
And so I had to. I was dealing with that, and I was thinking, could I still make it in for Bill and
Oh,
Ross?
Shame
and,
on you! Yeah.
And I said, well, no, probably not. I mean, it was very hard. You
sure,
know,
of course.
And having to deal just the logistics afterwards of doing that. And I was having been up all night with it. But the situation with it, the reason I wanted Steve to hang around was that one of the things that I felt was I had made an appointment with I'm not sure, they call them hospice vets.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Pet hospice.
And they will come to your house and euthanize.
Oh, my vet did that. I didn't know it was called something.
Well, sometimes. And hospice will even come to care for your animal very much in some ways, like human hospice, for weeks leading up to what ultimately will happen to make sure there's no pain. And also to help family members.
Yeah, I mean, it was a situation that it was sort of new to us, and so the situation that we were facing was that we had gotten a diagnosis about a month ago that she had a heart condition. She had a serious blood clot in her heart, and
yeah.
It was basically, they said, you know, it's kind of any day now,
so we
said, well, and so we came home, we actually made an appointment with the hospice vet, like, for 2 days after that.
To come and put her down.
And then she seemed to be fine, you know? This is the dilemma that we face, and I know, and I've heard from a lot of people since. I did a column on this on Sunday, and I've heard from a lot of people that we saw her, so, well, she's eating, and she's wagging her tail, and mm-hmm. And she was having some trouble, obviously, but for 3 weeks, she seemed to be fine, And so I kept saying, well, we'll know. When people would tell us, well, you'll know when it's time. You'll know when it's time. And I didn't know when it was time. I sort of thought on Friday, like, maybe, you know. And so and Friday night was a little bit rough, so I called the vet on Saturday morning, the hospice vet. And they said, well, we have an appointment for Monday afternoon. And I said, well, she should make it till Monday afternoon. And I have a lot of regret that I didn't act quicker. She hated car rides, so mm-hmm. I decided not to take her into the vet because our vet was open on Saturday, and there's also MedVet in Chicago, which is open 24/7, and I could have taken her there. And I said, well, no, she'll be fine. But Sunday night was very hard. She was up and down. She had this thing with her heart. She would not get blood supply to her lungs, so she would fall down and lie there unable to get up. And I knew it was time, and I was really glad she was coming. The vet was coming Monday, but I really felt very guilty that I'd waited so long, that I had sort of milked these last couple of weeks out of her.
Because we don't want to let go. That's what it is.
We don't want to let go, this is why I really want to talk to Steve about this, because I know Steve talks to pet owners and has faced the situation himself, and it's not selfish. I don't look back on it as selfish, because I really thought, well, she's eating her milk bones and she's wagging her tail. I mean, at 5 a.m. before she died, she collapsed, and I went over and I, you know, embraced her, and she was wagging her tail. I was thinking, well, she's still happy in some ways, but I don't know. I think I feel really bad about that. Like I should have realized that I am imposing some standard on her. I was misreading that situation.
Can I ask Steve really quick?
I'd like to ask Steve to just talk about this in general. But.
What's behind that when an animal, and you see this in humans sometimes too, when they're toward the end, there's this thrust of, hey,
yeah,
things are getting better.
Yes.
So what goes on there?
I don't know about humans. The will to live in our pets can supersede anything. And first of all, the column you wrote was just beautiful.
Well, thank you.
And mostly because it was an Eric Zorn written column in the first place. but it was. Because the response you got on Facebook, where I don't know how many hundreds, if not thousands, when all was said and done, because it touched so many people in a way in which they understand. If you have a companion animal, you've been through it. And what you often hear is, well, you'll know when it's time. Sometimes you do. And sometimes you kind of don't exactly know. Imposing our will were your exact words. I think there's some truth to that. But moreover, it's sometimes difficult to tell. They do mask illness, cats in particular, but dogs can too. And they just keep going.
Yeah, exactly.
And I told you when Tiki was unable to stand, it's like, it's, you know, we'd try to pick him up. He couldn't walk and he snapped at us, which he never did before. So that was out of character. And I told you, Steve, it almost looked like Tiki looked back at us and went, come on, guys. And so I kind of feel like I waited too long, but I didn't make an appointment. I just called and said, can you come today? It kind of like happened where I got to do this right now. Mm-hmm. You don't know when the right time is. And we often pray that our dogs will just, or our pets will go on their own.
Yes, yes.
So then we didn't have to do it. There is a sense of guilt. It's easier
for us, but you shouldn't feel a sense of guilt, because what you're doing is you're doing for our companion animals what personally I wish we could do for people that have no other ending. And if we could prevent continued pain, why not do it? And euthanasia literally means gentle death, as I suspect you know. I think because of the human-animal bond being so intense today, I talked to veterinarians about this, actually. There's a downside to the bond. And one of those downsides is that people, for a variety of different reasons, sometimes because they don't know, sometimes because they're so desperate to hold on no matter what, they wait too long. That's the trend that I'm seeing.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of figured that Hazel was alive for about 4,000 days, you know, give or take. And I gave her like 3 extra days that she shouldn't have had, and that she would have been better. And like, that's such a small percentage of her life, and just misjudging that by that much. I think she was actually okay until Friday. She was still, I think she's still a quality of life. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a really interesting article. I don't know if you saw this in the New York Times, is yesterday.
Yeah.
Knowing the right time to say goodbye to a pet, and there's an oncology vet who says that we confuse what natural death means to an animal.
Alice Villalobos, she's a friend. She'll be in town actually in a month or so. She'll be on my show.
Then this is a great thing, interesting thing she said when animals were domesticated, they gave up the freedom to go under a bush and wait to die. They become very quickly part of nature's plan due to predators or the elements. Yet in our homes we protect them from everything so they can live a long time, and sometimes too long.
I think about
the way Hazel was going down and the way we were able to keep propping her up, and the way you were, it sounds like you were able to pick up Tiki, take him outside.
Right.
It's like nature is telling you, no, this is over, and we had a way of dealing with this, and you are artificially prolonging it. And she has this scale, the thing where you look at the you look at hurt, hunger, hydration, hygiene, happiness, mobility, and more, and there's a scale, and the New York Times had this thing where you can go in and check the various, you know, one to ten.
It's tough to know, though, Eric. Yeah. I mean, okay, so this is true. One of our animals. I know Dr. Villalobos. I know her scale. I did it.
Yeah.
I still didn't know. I called her on the phone, and I said, because I'm friends with her, I said, well, what do you think? You know, it can be a very difficult decision. So sometimes our pets tell us, sometimes it's best to bring in a family member or friend who doesn't live with that animal every day.
My sister was like, it's time.
Exactly. Because they can look at it in a different way. Well, your veterinarian, if your veterinarian is close to you, and honest, your veterinarian may be able to tell you as well.
Well, and I had seen people in our neighborhood, and I'd seen them with their dogs, like carrying them up and down stairs. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm not going to be that guy who carries his dog up and down the stairs. And guess what?
You were the guy.
I was the guy carrying his dog up and down the stairs and picking her up after she collapsed, and sort of looking at myself in the mirror and thinking I needed to do better. And, you know, if and when we get another dog, I really want to do better.
But you didn't. I also don't want you to feel guilty. My goodness. I mean, this dog had an amazing Hazel.
Yes.
Had an amazing. One of our dogs is named Hazel currently.
Oh, great.
So had an amazing quality of life for all those days that you counted up, had love in a way that would be difficult to describe, I suppose, loved you back in a way that's tenfold of what I just described, because that's what dogs do. So you have nothing to feel guilty about.
I knew it would be great to have a noted pet expert.
It always is. It always is. Steve, thanks for hanging around.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Eric, sorry for your loss, of course. We'll take a little break and come back with more of Eric Zorn next.
So listening to us on the stream can
prolong your life.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, scientists have proved that.
We're chatting with Eric Zorn. I'm so sorry about Hazel. It's going to hurt for a while.
It was great to have not just a pet expert, but a noted pet expert.
Noted pet expert. It makes all the difference.
And talk about it, because it was really... I should have called him last week when I...
Who is this affecting most, you, your wife, or your kids?
Me, because I'm around most. I'm the one who... I was her alpha dog, you know. I was the one who fed her most of the time,
yeah.
Who walked her most of the time.
Yeah.
I'm the one who senses her absence most. It's weird, you know, it's like our kids...
Empty house,
Our kids are gone. You know, they're in college and beyond. But when we didn't feel like empty nesters, really, until the dog's gone. Suddenly the place is quite quiet.
Too quiet.
You need another
dog.
It's a little too quiet. But
can we talk about the mayoral election,
Let's do it. It's really,
what do we know?
It's really interesting. There's a new poll out this morning, and it shows Lori Lightfoot, the former federal prosecutor,
way ahead in the
polls. I was going to look at these numbers here. But if you look at the people who are supporting Lightfoot, she's leading Tony Preckwinkle, the Cook County Board President, 47-14.
Wow.
And if you add in the leaners, you know, they ask, are you voting for her? Are you leaning toward her? It's 53-17.
Mm-hmm.
Lightfoot's got that. I mean, this is a potential landslide of just historic proportions, but it's not over, and there's still 29% are undecided. And
I don't believe polls anymore either.
No.
Well, they're not that far off. And this is consistent with what we've been seeing with reported internal polling.
How do you explain this, though? This is a huge discrepancy.
Well, I think Lori Lightfoot is doing okay in the African-American community. They're both African-American women.
Right.
As well as, you know, the Tony Preckwinkle has not really, like, commandeered that vote. And then in other demographics, other parts of the city, in the north side, the lakefront, the northwest side, Lori Lightfoot is doing really well. She did really well in the first election, the general election. So I think she's just coalesced. She's got this constituency that includes a lot of people who are on the left, progressives on the left, who admire a lot of her intelligence and her stance on police reform and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got some people on the right who feel like she's the one. They feel like Tony Preckwinkle is too liberal in some ways, although they're very, very similar in almost every respect. Which is, you know, this is the small differences in this race. One of the things that happened over the weekend that was quite interesting was Bobby Rush, the congressman. He had endorsed Bill Daley in the first round.
Yeah.
He came out strongly endorsed Tony Preckwinkle in the runoff in this rally that was incendiary. And here's the quote from Rush. He says, "This election is really about what type of police force we're going to have in the city of Chicago, and everyone who votes for Lori," said Bobby Rush, "the blood of the next young black man or black woman who is killed by police is on your hands. If you're against police brutality and murder, you ought to be for Tony Preckwinkle. She is the only one who is going to have police under her control." Now, and then he was referring over and over again to that Lori Lightfoot is the candidate of the Fraternal Order of Police, the police union, and she's endorsed by all these conservative groups. And that's not accurate, that she is... The Fraternal Order of Police wants nothing to do with either of these candidates, pretty much. They don't care for either of them. And
both said, that, by the way, that Eddie Johnson is out? Have they both said that?
Tony Preckwinkle has indicated that Eddie Johnson will go, and Lori Lightfoot said that she does not want to get rid of Eddie Johnson because she doesn't want him to be a lame duck the minute if she's elected. She doesn't want to be a lame duck because we're heading into the summer violence season.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly how she feels about Eddie Johnson. She was on the panel that submitted three nominees for police superintendent. You remember when Emmanuel chose Eddie Johnson,
mm-hmm.
and Eddie Johnson's name was not on that list, that they had picked three candidates from around the country, or, you know, I forget exactly where they were from, and Emmanuel said, "Nope, forget it, I'm taking Eddie Johnson."
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's maybe a little bit put out by that.
Maybe.
But I feel like she wants to work with police. That's what she's saying. She wants to work with Eddie Johnson, see how things go. So she's not going to be getting rid of him. But the thing about this statement about the blood of black people is going to be on your hands if you vote for Lori Lightfoot was really, really over the top.
Yeah.
And people asked Trek went, first of all, they asked Bobby Rush to distance himself, to say, "What, you know, take that back." And he said, "No, I'm not taking it back," basically. And they asked Preckwinkle to disavow it. And, you know, often in campaigns, a supporter will say something that you disagree with, right? I mean, yeah. It happens. And you can't ask a politician to be responsible for everything that a supporter says. Otherwise, all they would be doing all day is sifting through remarks. This was, though, on the same stage in the same event where he said this. And it was really one of the strongest negative remarks that I've heard in Chicago politics.
What was the reaction from the crowd?
I wasn't there. So I don't know what the reaction was to the crowd. But there certainly is, I think it is incumbent on Preckwinkle to talk about that. And there's going to be a debate tonight on this radio station and Channel 9 at, I think, 7 o'clock. I want to check that. I think that's right. Tonight. And I'm sure this is going to come up. Are you going to distance yourself from what he said? Because, you know, it's one thing to have a harsh campaign, strong rhetoric. It's another thing to go that far over the top. And the thing is that Toni Preckwinkle isn't going anywhere. She may be the next mayor. She certainly, if she's not the next mayor, she's the Cook County Board President who has to work with the next mayor.
Right.
And to poison the water with something like that, to have that be out there when they're going to have to work together, I think is a really bad move on her part. She's like sort of burning her boats. She has no way to get back from that kind of situation. So it's really we've reached a really interesting point in this race where it looks like Preckwinkle, who has pulled her ads from TV, perhaps because she doesn't have any money left.
A lot of people have suggested that's the case. That's
something strategic, but she's going so hard, so negative after Lightfoot. And I think it's ill-advised. I think you could question Lightfoot's resume without impugning her character as strongly as was done here. And there's a really good set of articles in the Sun-Times over the weekend in which they did long profiles of both candidates. And Channel 11 did little half-hour documentaries of both candidates, and they're both available online. And you should watch them. Everyone should watch them because you realize that these are two really creditable people.
Right.
They have come up through difficult circumstances. They have achieved a lot. They are respectable people. They are decent people. The city will be served well, in my opinion, if either of them is elected. And this idea that you know they're just having to trash each other is a little disappointing. I know it's politics. It happens a lot. But these two women are accomplished women. They're impressive women.
7 o'clock tonight.
Seven o'clock tonight. Good. Excellent. So, yeah, I would recommend listening to it on the radio. That's the best.
Is WGN TV. You can watch it or listen to us, WGN 720.
Yeah, Eric, thanks.
Good to see you guys.
Absolutely. Good to see you. A little break, and then we'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's next. It's Bill and Wendy.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Don Kleppen from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.